And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder here at CRNTalk.com. I'm here in the studio today with Malcolm Berman.
And
Malcolm, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and we're all alone.
Well, for now, anyway, Jerry will call in, and hopefully Olympia will show up, or maybe call in, either way.
And who is Olympia?
Olympia LaPlante, amazing person who I met. Not only is she a girl, but she's black, and a rocket scientist, the real thing. Here's somebody who started, like, from nothing, worked her butt off, and before you knew, well, not before you knew it, but after a while, she was on top of the heap.
I've never met a rocket scientist before.
Well, if she shows up or calls in, you will.
Okay, well, what is your commentary of the week?
Commentary. Well, I'd just like to go over the fact that about a year and a half ago, when I was contemplating the writing of my very first nonfiction book called It's Time to Stop the Bullshit, which was to take on everything and anything that affected our daily lives in this great country of ours, as well as the rest of the world. And then I got introduced to you, okay? And you convinced me to do it as a radio show instead. And so it came to be. The problem with that project was that it became too political, as you recall. And as a result, it began to veer away from the original intended purpose. That would not work going forward. So I then vowed that our new venture, The View from Over Here, would be void of politics, but not necessarily economics. Sensible economics, that is. And why not, Malcolm?
Sensible economics.
After all, I was an actuary for most of my life, and economics is just one of the disciplines that actuaries get involved with.
Okay, let's have a definition. What is an actuary? I don't know if anybody knows what it is.
Oh, most people don't. I've had people say, gee, is that like a mortuary? Yes, people have said that to me. Those that are more in the know would say to me, is that something like an accountant? Well, that's about the closest without actually getting it. There are different kinds of actuaries, as you well know, Malcolm. But let's take the kind of actuary that I was. I was an actuary that worked on qualified retirement plans. In other words, people would put money in to their plan, get a tax deduction for all of the contributions made, and that would be their retirement fund that they would build up from whenever they would start it up until whenever they would retire. And retirement doesn't have to mean you have to stop working. Some of these people would continue working and still retire. So there are many ways to do that. So why do you need an actuary? Well, there are a lot of mathematics that go into it, and you have to wade your way through a lot of IRS rules and regulations.
A lot of BS.
Mucho BS. Some of the BS is really not necessary, but the IRS deems it to be necessary. So we would have to do that. And while you're doing that, you get involved in all kinds of different aspects of economics. Interest rates, why are the interest rates high? Why are they low? What are you projecting they'll be? Well, why are you projecting the interest rates will be X if or not Y? And so forth. So we would do that, and you get involved in it, and you get to see different aspects of the economy and how it works and how it affects the pension plans. So do you have sensible economics or insensible or unsensible or stupid economics? Of course. You see it every day. We see it every day. I see it every day, and I'm sure you do as well. So while we're talking about economics, to me, it brings up the fact, well, doesn't actually bring it up, but I read the papers. I try to read the papers every day, every other day, every week, and just to keep abreast of what is happening in the world. Now, the automobile industry in this country is going through a surge. They are doing well. And it's not only the American companies, but the Japanese companies that build the cars on our own soil. They have plants here. They hire American workers. Yeah. Is that good for America? Of course it is. Now, what is causing the automobile industry to do well? Well, first of all, we have low interest rates. That's helping the sales. We also have a decreasing cost of gasoline. That's also helping. So those two items are helping. There are other factors, of course, but those are two primary factors. Lower cost of gasoline, lower cost of interest permits people to buy and pay it out. Not too many people or not a lot of people have the ability to plunk down a check and say, I'm driving it away and no more payments. Actually, dealers like to see you pay it out. The worst thing to a dealer is when you come in and buy a car for cash. They like to make the deals and stretch it out, even though your payments are lower. That's how they make more money. How do I know that? I researched it, and it was also verified to me by an attorney who works for car dealerships. And he said the thing that they hate the most is when you buy a car for cash. So remember that. If you can buy it for cash, so much. So much the better. Now, what else is the government doing about interest rates? And Malcolm, I'd like for you to give me your opinion on this. Housing industry. Okay, the two biggest industries that employ the greatest number of people are the automobile and housing industries, not only because of direct employment, but because also the ancillary businesses that feed housing or automobile. You have 100 different subcontracting industries that are also related to the so-called domino effect. So those two industries employ a hell of a lot of people. And it seems to me that it would make good sense for the government to nurture those two industries.
Well, wasn't that our problem that got us into the economic downfall?
When the housing bubble, the mortgage thing
burst. The mortgage that they were giving.
That was bad economics, and that was the result of greedy banks and other lending institutions just trying to get their biggest share of the pie.
But is there a way that the government can guarantee the loans or do the loans to stimulate the housing industry?
Well, I'm sure there is, but that takes people smarter than me to come up with the answers.
Well, if everybody's knocking, they say socialism. Again, I'm not sure what's so bad about socialism.
Well, socialism doesn't work. Look what happened to Russia. They became capitalistic.
Russia was not a socialist. Russia was a communist. Plus,
well, communism in terms of the political aspect, but they were socialistic in terms of the economics, and that didn't work. And so they became capitalistic, as did all of the East European countries, and even Red China, that was originally thoroughly communistic in politics as well as economics, and they are one of the biggest, most powerful capitalistic countries on the planet.
Right, but isn't there some sort of balance? I mean, even in this country, we have
there has to be a good balance.
Social Security, we have unemployment insurance, we have disability. Yeah. Now, a lot of people might be abusing this, but you get that all the time.
Wherever you are, in whatever the system is. Mm-hmm. There are always going to be people that take advantage and milk or abuse a system, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing. It's part of human nature.
Well, that's what we were talking about that on the way in. Are some people innately evil? Is it in their DNA? Is it, they always say you teach a child to hate, but is there hate in the person themselves?
You know what? I think we'll get the answers to that question when we find out, is there really a God up above us? I think that's where we have to go, because some religionists say it's a matter of free choice. I find that hard to believe. If there really is a God up there, he or she would not tolerate what goes on this planet. In my humble opinion.
Well, what I could see, if you're talking about theologically or philosophically, is that God lets us have free will and then is looking down upon us as we would look on a reality television show.
Well, if you want to believe that, that's fine. But remember now, we're veering off and we're going into dangerous areas because everybody says two things that you should not talk about are religion and politics because they seem to rouse the worst emotions in people.
Yeah, but remember, we're on radio and we're trying to create controversy. And we're trying to get people to listen to us and get angry.
Absolutely.
Or agree with us.
Get angry. Call us at 800-336-2225 if you believe what we're talking about or if you disbelieve it. If you hate what we're saying, call us. We want to know. Okay? We really want to know.
Next. Okay,
now, I got something good here. Last week, we broached the subject of bitcoins. Okay? That was the digital monetary system. People, well, gee, I never heard of that. Unbeknownst to us, this was the lead story in Time magazine this week. On the cover and inside the magazine itself, they were doing an item on bitcoins and the deep web, where you use these bitcoins. Now, the deep web is it's not just for people of nefarious backgrounds or those that are looking to break the law or to avoid taxes. And by the way, you can use that not only to sell your drugs and arms and so forth, but if you are looking for an assassin, that's the place to go.
I know some streets in Los Angeles. You can find them much, much easier.
Yeah, but those people don't have good credentials. Here, you know they'll have better credentials, I think.
We can look for some
And how do you pay for these services? You pay via bitcoins. Now, also, the deep web is also used by, at times, the military service when they want true black operations where nobody could get to you, or even law enforcement agencies where they don't want anybody to find out where you are or what you're doing. So it's out there. There are things out there that will blow your mind away. All of it a result of the amazing electronic revolution and everything that is connected to it. All of this transmitted and relayed by satellite. Now, I remember reading my first article on satellites back in 1945 in Popular Science magazine. Satellites. Who would ever think? And now they bounce back these signals, taking us all over the world. Oh, here's something good. This is an interesting thing on bitcoins. Back in 2009, a man in Norway, who was a Norwegian, I guess, he was doing a thesis on encryption. And as part of this thesis, he invested $27 in 5,000 bitcoins. That original investment is now worth almost $1 million. Go figure.
You're talking about it, and still I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, bitcoins is still something out there. I understand what you're saying individually. But I have no idea what the concept is, how I get involved.
Well,
or
then your assignment between now and next week is to look it up. You can Google it on the internet. Look it up. See where it takes you. See what it says. And see what the sites are.
Well, as an actuary, do you think you can get my retirement funds into bitcoins and make me a multi-billionaire by
Well,
the
not
end of
exactly,
the show?
Because in order to put money into a retirement plan, it has to be what's called earned income.
Oh, forget about
okay?
it. And anyway, I got the 60-second mark.
60-second? I mean, wow, it went by that quick.
Right. Stay tuned. We have Rabbi Jerry Cutler is going to be doing a movie review of Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Okay, sounds interesting.
And if you have any comments about anything we said, give us a call at 800-336-2225. And you're listening to the
CRNTalk.com, The View from Over here. And even if you don't have anything interesting to say, just call us and say hello.
Say hello.
So we'll know you're out there.
be back in 2 minutes.
Hi, Stan Weisleder here again on The View From Over Here. This is CRNTalk.com. And we have with us on the, well...
On the phone.
On the phone? You mean a telephone? A real telephone?
Is this Jerry Cutler?
It is he indeed.
Jerry, what are you going to talk about today?
A lot of things.
As if I didn't know.
I have Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, and also I saw Running From Crazy.
Okay, talk about it. We have a whole 5 minutes and 50 seconds.
We do?
Yep.
Let me tell you about Las Vegas. It has four incredible stars, first of all, as you well know. Venerable stars such as Michael Douglas, Robert De Niro, Morgan Freeman, Kevin Kline. And it is such a wonderful sight watching the four of them. However, it's Mary Steenburgen who steals the movie with her slightly off-key warbling, heart as soft as the interior of a Vegas cactus.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, very. She's so wonderful, this lady. The four of them, childhood friends from Brooklyn, Flatbush section of Brooklyn.
That sounds familiar.
Uh-huh.
What street?
They're called the Flatbush Four. Who have long since moved in different parts of the country, get together for a bachelor party in Las Vegas. It's Douglas's bachelor party. He's the most successful and healthy. He's going to marry a woman about 30, 40 years his junior.
Isn't that from real life?
Yeah, exactly. Could very well be. I don't think he's 30 years older than his current wife. The script is by Dan Fogelman. It's sometimes funny. Other times it's ludicrous. Director John Turteltaub. He follows the four of them, and he keeps everyone in their particular space. He does a great job. He's the guy who directed one of my favorite movies, When You Were Sleeping, and also Cool Runnings.
Ah, that was a good movie.
Yeah, and I also bar mitzvahed him, but that's an aside. He's a great kid, this one. The script is predictable. It's harmless. It stays away from the crude shorthand, humor, which is found in Vegas, the Vegas setting of The Hangover, which I found very crude. I didn't think was that funny. But this stays away from it, and good for John to do that. His direction is shorthanded, and the AARP quartet interplays with comedic expertise and Miss Steenburgen's coquettish actions and whimsical delivery of her lines. They win, just win over our hearts.
Well,
you will
tell me, Jerry,
fall in love with her. Yes.
Does the movie touch on the fact that at one time Howard Hughes was a major presence in Las Vegas, and that before him the mafia, so-called mafia, was a major presence?
No. It stays away. It's not to it. That. In fact, the Howard Hughes movie also starred Steenburgen.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, someone analogized the movie to a 40 years after The Big Chill type of movie, you know, with these guys getting together and having the camaraderie of...
Well, this is a Vegas setting, and it's just played strictly for laughs. The good thing about this, there are no crotch jokes, no vomiting, no gratuitous nudity or blood squirting.
Well, you know how I feel about gratuitous nudity. If it's not in the movie, I don't want to see it.
What hotel was it filmed at?
I'm sorry?
What hotel or hotels was it filmed at?
I believe Caesar's Palace.
Okay.
And it's all unadulterated fun. It's not for those people who want to see the thrill seekers. I want to see the computer-generated film.
Well, okay. But do you think that it's possibly for the older folk because of the cast, or would the...
It's very definitely, yeah. I don't think the kids are going to...
They wouldn't appreciate it.
Kids being anyone under 30.
Anyone under 50.
Actually, it's a bit more, yeah. Kevin Kline is great. And there's he's married to a lovely girl... who happens to be Monty Hall's daughter.
Okay, how many bagels?
Yeah, quickly, we're getting the signal.
Two and a half.
Two and a half out of four.
Whoa, okay.
So that's about 70%. Okay. What do you have lined up for next week?
Next week. You're right. There is a next week.
There is a next week.
I'm going, you know what? I'm going to see Aftermath. That's the second movie I'm going to see. Yeah. And for the first, it escapes me. I don't remember, but I know it'll be a good movie.
Well, do me a favor. Could you bring Jeff along?
Jefferson returns home. She's been away.
I know. That's why we feel the absence.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, thanks very much, Jerry. We'll speak to you next week.
God love you guys.
Okay, Jerry.
Okay, stay tuned. We'll be right back with The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com.
Hello there. This is Stan Weisleder back at The View from Over Here. We are on CRNTalk.com. Any questions? Any gripes? Anything, give us a call at 800-336-2225. Our special guest today is really special. Her name is Olympia LaPointe. And I have to tell you, not only is she a girl, yeah, I'm looking at her right now, she's definitely a girl.
A girl or a woman?
I'm definitely a woman.
And also, those of you who do not watch us or are just listening, she's also black. And the most amazing thing, and I find it very amazing, because this is the very first time I have met somebody like this in the flesh, because she is a rocket scientist. Really, truly, honest to goodness, a rocket scientist. You hear the joke all the time, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this. Well, you have to be a rocket scientist to do some of the things. And Olympia is going to tell us what she does and how she got to be on top of the heap.
No, top of the world as a rocket
on
scientist.
Top of the world, excuse me. The heap is when the rocket comes crashing down, but her rockets like to stay up and go into orbit or maybe even further. Olympia, how are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Now, tell us as briefly as you can, why and how did you get to become a rocket scientist?
Well, the road to rocket scientist was quite bumpy in my life. I was the farthest from being prepared to be a rocket scientist. I grew up in the inner city Los Angeles area in a poverty home, as well as I had just a mother that didn't have education at the time. And so that path of becoming a rocket scientist was quite tricky, but there was a three-step process I learned to overcome what I call mathophobia. And what mathophobia is a severe fear that happens in the reptilian part of the brain that shuts off the problem-solving part of our frontal brain lobe. And when I found out there was a path to solve problems, I took it and embraced it, and that path of becoming a rocket scientist was first understanding and rejecting the fear that I had. Two, it was reprogramming my brain to overcome fear by replacing it with different thoughts. And third step in that process was rebuilding the neurons in my brain to actually have the capability of not only learning math and science, but actually later on become a rocket scientist.
How did you get to that point? I mean, was there some sort of epiphany or a person that inspired you, that made you believe in yourself and to do this effort, this enormous effort to change your whole mindset?
Yes, that's a great question. Most people are shocked. They are shocked when they found out that in school I failed algebra. I failed geometry.
It sounds like Albert Einstein.
And Albert Einstein had a similar story. And I made a D in calculus. And there was a teacher named Mr. Provincio. I always remember him. He told the students that if anyone wanted free tutoring before their AP exam in the calculus, he would just grant them complimentary tutoring to prepare for the test. And so I, coming from a background that did not have money for tutoring, decided to jump on that opportunity. So I caught the bus 2 hours each way just to sit with this man 1 hour a day to show him the mathematics, to show him the
You know, that's
statistics.
Amazing what you said. You said you failed algebra.
Failed algebra.
Well, you know what? I failed Algebra 1 twice consecutively.
Really?
And I went on to become an actuary. Okay, it's not a rocket scientist, but still.
Well, your experience is great.
For me, it was an accomplishment, especially when I think back in school and one of my advisors said, quit the academic program, go to a trade school, learn how to become an auto mechanic. That
made me
even more determined. People say to me, well, have you ever become an actuary after failing basic Algebra 1 twice? I just said, well, I'm stubborn. I just didn't want to give up.
Sam, that's another show. Let's get back to Olympia.
But I feel for what you did and what you went through, failing it and then going on to overcome it. It's incredible.
Thank you, Stan. I relate to your story, and what I realize is that most people who do fail are really geniuses in disguise. People don't realize that. People who usually fail the first time
are geniuses
in disguise.
That's not what they said to me in school.
Well, this teacher.
He's long since dead.
No. Well, I'm so sorry that happened in your case. If I was your teacher, I would so encourage you. But most people do not realize that if they fail math or they fail science, that's not the end of the world. What it is they've been given the opportunity to now find out exactly how to correct their mistakes so they can succeed and thrive at what they do. Most people don't look at failure that way.
But you were talking about setting your mind to a different, like a different neurological connection.
Yes.
Because what I feel is when I speak to students, especially in math, sometimes they approach it very negatively. That they're saying, I cannot do it. I cannot do it, and therefore they can't do it. To me, it's like I analogize a lot of things in sports. If you think the other guy is better than you, he will be. If you think he's faster than you, he will be.
You bring up an excellent point. Our minds are very powerful. Powerful reprogrammers. And in this case of when I worked with this teacher, I sat with him and then it clicked. When I was sitting with this teacher, it clicked and I realized, hey, wait just a second. I'm smart. I can get this. I may not understand it now, but I will. And that process of that epiphany moment was what allowed me to see that I was suffering from a math fear that I called mathophobia. And later on, when I was into the college and tutoring people and seeing this pattern happen over and over again, I realized that fear, that math fear, I coined it and personally named it as mathophobia, and that's what my book is about.
Well, what type of reinforcement did you have at home?
Oh, I had my mother was a single parent, and she raised four of us by herself. And unfortunately, we did not have any other influences in the home at that point in time. And my mother always told us that the only way that we can change our future is to get an education. So I listened to her and did that.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be back. We're facing a break. Stay tuned to The View from over here with our special guest, Olympia LaPointe.
LaPointe.
And don't take any rockets off because we want you back for the next segment.
We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder. I'm back at The View from Over Here. We are on crntalk.com. I'm here with Malcolm in the studio and our special guest today.
It's Malcolm in the middle.
Malcolm in the middle? You are in the middle. Exactly right. Our special guest today, Olympia LaPointe. I have so many questions that I think we could have had a whole hour for her, Malcolm. What did she think about the movie Gravity?
We'll have her back.
What do you think about Wernher von Braun?
Oh.
What do you think about females in your special field?
I want to get personal.
Sure.
Because she is, I don't know if you can see her on the screen, but she's very attractive.
Thank you.
And she's young.
Malcolm, you're married.
I know, but I still have eyes.
I'm flattered. Thank you.
But I just wanted to find out, being single, or if I was single, to meet an attractive woman who's a rocket scientist, I might be a little intimidated.
I would imagine a lot of people would be, yeah.
So how have you found life in the...
In the fast lane.
The fast lane.
Or the slow lane, whichever.
I am single. And I find it quite fascinating. If anything, men are just fascinated by my background. And I realize I attract really intelligent, caring men. And I'm very fortunate because I am a very good judge of character, and I take the time to get a chance to know people for who they are. And I'm very thankful that the people in my past and the people who are in my life are very intelligent, sharp, caring people. And so I find that most people are just fascinated by my background. To me, it's just like a series of steps that I did because of what I was passionate about. But I noticed that people are fascinated by my background. And
tell me, with your math background, did you ever think of becoming an actuary?
Actually, I did. And most people don't realize that being a rocket scientist, I was specifically a reliability engineer in rocket science. And that's the actuary of rocket science. Reliability engineering.
So you would figure out if it's going to make it or not.
If it would make it or not. Okay. That was my job.
Are you trying to recruit her to your company?
My job was to use mathematics and science to calculate the catastrophic probability of explosion within the space shuttle's flight.
Did you ever consider being an astronaut?
Do you know what? No.
No.
I have a really, really great good friend who is an astronaut. He's a retired astronaut, and he's now a vice president for a major aerospace company. And he's actually the one that endorsed my book, Robert Kirby. And I remember asking him, like, weren't you scared to sit on top of that explosion? Because literally, it's a controlled explosion to launch the space shuttle into outer space. And for me personally, I have never desired to be an astronaut. However, I always desired to be a rocket scientist that came from a jet propulsion laboratory.
So you want to shoot them off, but you sure as hell don't want to be in it.
Now, you mentioned your book, Mathophobia. Can you tell us about it?
Mathophobia is a book.
Well, first you have to tell us where we could get this book.
Okay.
People out there wondering, well, where can I get that great book? Maybe I can overcome mathophobia.
Yes. Mathophobia is available on Amazon.com. It's also sold through my website, which is OlympiaLapointe.com. And the book has its own website, which is Mathophobia.com. The book is also sold within electronic distribution centers, Barnes & Noble. It's also sold with a variety of books, Sony e-readers. There's a whole list out there. Just Google Mathophobia, go to mathophobia.com. You'll find the links to be able to purchase the book. It's also being sold in college bookstores over at Pierce College here in Los Angeles, Pasadena City College. It's on its way to being held on various different bookstores on college campuses across the nation.
Now, based on your overcoming that... the mathophobia.
Yes.
Do you give speeches at local high schools, especially like inner city type of schools, and as a success story and a positive role model?
Yes, I do. This morning, right before I had the time with you both, I had the opportunity to speak to a local high school, and I shared my story. And it's the same story in which I'm going to share in my upcoming TED talk. And the TED is the Technology, Entertainment, and Design talk on TED.com. And so I share my personal story of overcoming this adversity to become a rocket scientist, as well as the three-step process that we use that I explained in my book, as also within the TED Talk, about how to reprogram the brain to overcome fear so we can solve problems.
Well, what about the fear of discrimination? We asked during the break if you encountered any kind of discrimination during your rise to becoming a rocket scientist. Can you talk about that briefly?
Yes.
Did you have it, any of it?
Yes, I did. And it was very surprising to say, I'm happy that it happened because it made me.
You are?
Yes. Because I was able to become stronger through it. I found a way to circumvent it and use it in my favor. And the reason why I say that is, for example, the discrimination, like I'm a woman of color. I am a mixed African-American woman. And so you would think that would be the first thing that somebody would see about me in this engineering environment. But surprisingly, it wasn't. The first thing that people saw was that I was a woman.
It is obvious.
But I purposely embrace that. For example, I would be in a room of 200 people reviewing for an engine test and that engine, like a new engine configuration. And I look around the room, there'd be 200 people. I would maybe see one other woman there.
Yeah, Olympia, hold that thought. But the thing that stands out to me about you is has nothing to do with color, nothing to do with gender, has to do with enthusiasm.
Oh!
I mean, you just sparkle. Anyway, guys.
Thank you.
Stay tuned. The View from over here. We'll be right back.
With Olympia. Hi there, Stan Weisleder here at The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. We are in our last segment. I'm here with Malcolm in the Middle and Olympia LaPointe, our special guest for today, a real honest-to-goodness rocket scientist. Olympia, how are you today?
I'm doing so well, especially the both of you two men here.
Now, we were talking in the break. I wanted to find out that you had mentioned that you were mixed African American, but you had mentioned about your mom.
But wait,
so
but
tell me about her background.
Mixed, but you're not mixed up, that
no.
I can tell.
Malcolm, you had asked me a question. You had asked me about my background. I am mixed. My mother is French Jewish and Native American.
I've never heard of that combination.
But my mother's side of the family, half of her family, one of her parents is French and Native American, and her father's Jewish.
Ah, well, my wife is Latina, so I call my kids Jutinos.
Jutinos!
Hey, I'm here with a bunch of mongrels. What's going on? Well, you know, I think that's what makes people a little bit more interesting, when you have this mixture. You get the best of each part, I think. Well, sometimes you can get the worst of each part. Then what do you do?
Yeah, I say, you know, only in America. When I met my wife, she was working for two of my friends. One was a Mexican-American. The other, a second-generation Irish. One of the secretaries was Filipino. The bookkeeper was from Vietnam. And one of the salesperson was Ethiopian. Second-generation Russian. Only in America.
Only in America.
So it was a little UN.
Then I think, you know, I'm originally from New York. So from New York flying to Los Angeles, I've seen so many mixtures. I can't imagine growing up in a small town someplace in the Midwest or the South where you only see one type of person.
Do you know, that happened to me, surprisingly. I grew up in the middle of South Central Los Angeles, and there was originally just Latino and black students that were there. And there was an event that happened I talk about in my book, which forced me to go to another school, and it was a traumatic event. But in that process, I was bused to a gifted magnet school, and that was actually the first time that I had seen people who were not black and Latino. That I had only seen white people on TV in commercials, and I remember getting close to them, I'm like, oh, they're real. And I just was so thankful because I had that experience and had the opportunity to find out about different cultures and grow through that experience. And it's the parents, the parents of the kids who helped me fill out the applications to go to school and to college.
Actually, is that it?
That was quick.
Oh,
I hear the music, but I don't see any sound.
I think we're getting bumped by too many commercials.
Okay. Hey, Paul, is that the... How long do we have left? 60 seconds.
60 seconds, one whole minute.
Okay, but we have a whole lot to talk to you about.
Yeah, Olympia, we want you to come back. We'll have to get a...
It would be my pleasure to come back. I'd love to come back, share more of my story, and to help your listeners.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, what would you like to say to our listeners if you have 30 seconds, which is all you have?
Find me on my webpage, olympialapointe.com, O-L-Y-M-P-I-A-L-E, capital P-O-I-N-T.com.
Okay. And what advice will you give them now in the last 10 seconds?
Check out my book, Mathophobia. You can find it online and go to mathophobia.com.
Okay. Stay tuned next week to The View from Over Here on CRNDigitalTalk.com.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.